Welcome to the Butts in the Seats podcast, episode number 147.
We're here.
I'm Nick alongside an exasperated Emily.
I'm more apathetic than exasperated. I don't want to talk about this episode.
Well, this episode included. Emily, what is it we do here on this podcast?
You just you catch me with this out of the cold blue. Nick, we take a week by week look at the slow but inevitable downfall of WCW through the late 90s and early 2000s.
And how slow is that feeling?
It's a trudge.
And how inevitable is it feeling?
Very. Right now, we're just marching to death.
It is wild with us doing 96, 97 on the Patreon. It's like the business numbers. I'm like, oh my God.
The business numbers, yes. But we just watched a fucking shit show. Not a shit show, but a shitty show.
World War III, 96. Not great.
No.
But we are about to simultaneously do Starrcade 2000 and 96. And the numbers are going to be so different.
I believe the numbers. I don't trust the quality.
Also, the roster is going to be wildly different.
Kevin Nash is on both.
Yeah, I guess Nash, DDP, Luger, and Ray, I think might be the entirety of it. I don't know. We'll have to kind of calculate
a little
better.
We'll compare and contrast, yeah.
But we're not here today to talk about that. We're going to talk about the December 4th, 2000 WCW Monday Nitro live from Lincoln, Nebraska.
You know, where all the great wrestling shows happen.
The Cornhuskers are out.
Yeah.
This show did 3,400 in attendance, which is half full for this arena.
Oh, really?
And it did a 2.5 to Raw's 5.
That tracks.
Emily, I have a wild stat for you before we begin.
Okay.
Including this one, there are 15 Nitros left.
That's it?
Yes.
That's it?
There's 15 Nitros. There are 4 pay-per-views plus some ECW shows plus other stuff we're doing, but
we still have a year of programming.
Thereabouts.
Just under. Jesus. That's crazy. I watched 15 episodes of television yesterday and today.
You're working hard, clearly.
It's the slow season.
I have some backstage notes, including a spicy quote during this.
Ooh, oh yeah, I'm excited about this quote. So you were teasing me with this quote earlier.
Yes, because last episode, which was the ECW episode, We mentioned that Scott Hall got arrested again. And there was some article in some paper, and they got a quote from Dana Hall.
Dana Hall is Scott Hall's wife.
Yes.
I never would have known her name.
It's a shame that these so-called friends of Scott would persist in urging fans to get Scott to return. It is only cruel of them to give fans false hope, not to mention Scott. Obviously, these men do not know all the facts or understand the seriousness of his most recent arrest. Obviously, they do not wish to acknowledge that Scott did not start drinking because he lost his job, but lost his job because of his addiction. He did not start drinking after our divorce. We divorced because of his addictions and infidelities.
Jesus.
They obviously do not understand or care that their friend and my husband and father of our children is on a very self-destructive path and is in need of help from his friends, not urgings to return or believing he can return to what has contributed to further destroy his marriage, our family, and his life.
Jesus.
Obviously, they do not understand or care that he could have been killed others, or his children. They don't understand or care that if he continues on this path without intervention, they will be attending his funeral the next time they see their friend.
Woof.
Then they can explain to his children how much they cared or tried to help their father. Jesus.
That, you know, she's right. She's right. Scott Hall is lucky in some facet of the word that he made it out of this and lived to be an old man. He didn't live to be a very old man.
Yeah.
But he lived to get through this part of his life.
Which, shout out to DDP.
Genuinely. Yeah. He stepped up.
Now, obviously, she is referring to Kevin Nash and DDP.
Yes.
However, I was watching something talking about the Royal Rumble 2001, which is upcoming in our timeline.
Goody.
And Triple H breaks out a fucking razor's edge during that match to be like, oh, Scott Hall, you can come here. It's like, guys.
Don't do that.
The fucking click.
Don't be that dick.
But yeah, I saw it in the recap that had that quote. It's like, man, she's a hell of a promo.
No, that is just an exasperated, exhausted woman who has done everything that she can on her side to remedy a situation and then chose to get herself out of said situation and is just watching the father of her children destroy himself.
Yeah, and after that arrest, WCW Legal has declared you cannot say Scott Hall on television.
I mean, now,
that is going to come up big time on the next episode of Thunder.
Oh, Thunder? Well, it came up in this episode.
Apparently, Ric Flair is completely forgetting to hit certain points in his promos, which I feel like we noticed because we had people cleaning up his segments afterwards. And WCW offered Tori Wilson a contract of $100,000 to stay, but she was making $250,000, so significant pay cut.
Yeah.
But that's all for the notes. Let's go to the weather report, where there's always thunder. Now, if you remember, the last Nitro we did had a surprise appearance from Sid with 5 seconds left in the show.
Correct.
Now, they taped Thunder right after, so the live audience actually got a Sid promo for Thunder.
Oh, okay.
Like 10 minutes later.
Great.
So Sid comes out to explain where he's been, and he's like, oh, my pride was keeping me away after handing over the title. Because if you remember, back in April, during Reboot Nitro, they vacated the titles, made him hand it over, and then Eric Bischoff's like, what's the matter, Sid? Forgot your scissors?
Oh, yeah.
I said, what's the matter, Sid?
Yeah, forgot I your remember this bit, yes.
And no mention of his weird one-night return where he helped Bischoff that no one remembers.
Well, yeah, no, because nobody remembers it.
And because they're in Nebraska, he tries to tie in the Wright brothers to his promo and return, and we're going to, like, you know, fly.
Are they from Nebraska? I thought they're from North Carolina.
No, I think they're Nebraska. I don't know.
I swear they, maybe they took flight in North Carolina because there's a whole museum and, like, the Outer Banks for them.
But he debuts his new catchphrase, because mama says it be that way sometimes.
This is Sid's catchphrase?
Yes.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So, that's going great, clearly. I'm so hyped for Starrcade.
Okay, so we were both right, Nick. They are from Ohio, but they took their first flight in North Carolina. So there's more memorials to them.
You said
in North Carolina.
From Ohio?
Yeah.
We're in Nebraska, babe.
Oh, then you were just wrong. Sorry.
He ties the Wright brothers in. I don't know why.
You were just straight up wrong, because they're from Dayton, Ohio.
The fuck? Why did he do that then? Is he stupid?
Yeah, and they were born in Indiana. They grew up in Ohio. There is no mention of Nebraska.
Okay, I don't know, yeah, but
there's no Nebraska in here.
He fully mentions the Wright brothers. I don't know why. Anyway, elsewhere on the show, the Cat stops Jim Duggan from interfering, further fueling Landstorm's frustration in Duggan. Lex Luger beat Norman Smiley, and then Goldberg made the save post-match.
Norman.
Cut from the cock. Crowbar is gifted a golden pipe wrench by a Nitro girl.
You're not going to be able to say that much longer.
Well, I mean, technically it was cut from the network. This is still an issue every week where these episodes are an hour and 10 minutes as opposed to an hour and 30. Like, they are cutting everything backstage.
Which is weird. Like, I don't understand why.
Oh, as we mentioned last time, God, this feels like forever ago. Pamela asks Reno and Marie if they're dating, and it's like, nope, they're siblings.
That came up in this episode, too. They have, like, a weird moment where I'm like, oh, fuck, right, they're siblings, yeah. Not dating.
And this is cut from Peacock, and Pamela's like, wait a minute, that means he and Vito are brothers. Like, way to be on it, Pam.
Wait, I'm sorry, I've missed who Marie is related to. So is she sleeping with any of these men?
No.
I thought that she was somebody's girlfriend. No. I thought she was the one that was getting married.
So she already is married then. I don't know.
Wait.
I don't think she was in those segments.
I need someone to draw the family tree.
Emily, what matters today is that Vino, Reno, and Marie.
Vino? Papa da Boopy.
I said Vino.
You said Vino, like wine.
They're all fucking siblings, okay? I don't care enough about this.
I do. I need the family tree.
Now, admittedly, Johnny the Bull, not related, which that's really a killer element of the storyline.
Go fuck yourself.
And Emily, I don't know if you're aware of this, but in General Erection versus Shane Douglas.
I'm going to cite this in our divorce agreements. Like, this man won't stop making the same joke, and I can't do it anymore.
Well, in that match of Generation versus Shane Douglas, Tori Wilson hops on Generation's back and he runs her into the corner turnbuckle, which he doesn't see her. He's just like, someone on my back, and like runs backwards. And they treat this like she has died.
Yes.
The commentary goes quiet. Lieutenant Loco tries to like push her corpse out of the ring, and the rest of the MIA are like, what the fuck are you doing? Oh my God, she's dead. So Tori gets stretchered out as Chavo walks away, and this goes on for so long.
Ugh.
Crowbar beat David Flair in a hardcore title match, and we get a Stacy sighting as she checks on David after the match, And
yeah, Stacey's back, I guess.
Yeah, she does have a baby bump, but the cameras never get a great angle of it, to hide the shoddy work.
Yeah, it's not a real pregnancy. Stacey Keibler is not pregnant here. She's probably got like a pillow up her shirt and is lumpy. Like, yeah, keep the camera far away.
Yeah, apparently her and Medasia, somewhere around this time, film a mud wrestling scene for the movie Bubble Boy.
That is just a Mad Lib of a sentence.
Yeah. Jeff Jarrett has the Harris Boys' backup. They beat the Filthy Animals after a guitar shot. Tigress on commentary says that wasn't fair because the ref didn't see it.
Yeah, that's how fair works.
Yeah, as opposed to last week when they won like 3-on-1 with everybody interfering. And like, well, you know, fuck you, Jeff Jarrett. Ref didn't see it. But here, oh, that wasn't fair. The ref didn't see it. I hate the inconsistencies.
What?
Cut from Peacock. Daphne tells Crowbar that her and Ozzy broke up, which we saw during this. Ozzy's part of like the security crew.
He's like part of the ring crew, it sounds like.
But they broke up and now she wants to be with Crowbar. And Crowbar turns her down. Mike Awesome costs Bam Bam Bigelow a tables match. And in our main event, Scott Steiner retained against Buff Bagwell. And there was a missed spot due to production in the match where Scott Steiner's about to lock in the Steiner recliner. And Sid was supposed to appear on the Titantron to like distract Steiner so Buff could get like a near fall and a roll up. And they screw up the timing. So Scott like goes to put it in the hold, just stops, jaws with the crowd, and then finally just goes to do it. And when they finally play it, it's clearly meant to be video, but they just play the audio. Like, it's like, hey, over here. Where? Sorry, over here, dumbass, is the actual line. But Sid comes out post-match for a stare down. And
cool.
The main event of Starrcade is so heatless. I don't get why these guys are fighting.
Genuinely, there were points. You were talking about Thunder, all of that. So many points in that were like, how long have I zoned out for? Are you talking about the real episode now? Because there are so many points that apparently happened in Thunder that a similar point happens in Nitro.
Yeah.
I really was like, oh my God, I need to lock in because I have missed so much. What have I said?
No, and I watched that so long ago that I'm like, oh yeah, what happened on Thunder?
Jeez.
But no, that's it for that. So now let's go into our main show, which Woo-hoo! Is all things you would have seen.
Yes.
And we open with shots of the campus of the University of Nebraska.
Why did we feel the need to go to University of Nebraska?
Because whatever arena they're at is for the university.
Oh, so it didn't make that clear. It didn't make it clear that we were in a university arena. I thought it was just like sports.
Some 35-year-old fan cheers in an empty stadium for Nebraska. So Jeff Jarrett runs in from a decent distance back of frame, hits the guy overhead with a guitar, and it was not a great breakaway. I was like, ooh.
No.
And, you know, choke on that, you had corn husk and slap nut.
Or whatever the hell.
And I'm like, are these going to be a thing? Because last week we had the one vote you forgot to count, so.
Oh, well, that just went over so well. We need to do it every week.
Yeah, I'm like, is this just the new way Nitro opens?
Is this the cold open? Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised.
We then get a video recap of the shows from last week, and we then cut to the Natural Born Thrillers doing one of my favorite terrible directing things in video, where you are standing around next to a dead end, and you don't start walking until you start talking.
Yeah.
So it's like, clearly you were just standing there waiting for your cue. And it's not natural. Yeah. It doesn't help you like up against a roll-up door, so clearly they didn't.
They had
just
nowhere
come
to come from. Yeah.
And then Stasiak and Palumbo want their tag titles back. Oh, fuck. It's Oklahoma.
Why the fuck is Oklahoma here?
Yeah. They're just walking and it's like, hey, Sanders. It's like, what? Why are you
here?
Why
is Oklahoma here? I didn't even know he was still backstage.
No, I think we briefly mentioned that, but it's such a rotating cast that.
Jesus.
Yeah. He's not doing the like Twitch eye thing. So that's something. He still bailed on that, but.
Because of later, I think he's here because there's some sort of, like, rivalry?
Yeah, I assume they were good, because there's certain college football programs that are always floating around being good, so...
Who knows?
I think it's kind of like, in baseball, it's always fair to, like, use the Yankees for cheap heat.
Fair. Okay, I'll take cheap heat.
I think that's the vibe I get, yeah.
If this is how we're getting cheap heat, is just to bring out Oklahoma, like, come on, gang. We can do better.
I mean, Nebraska and Oklahoma, that's not...
They're not far away geographically, no. But just Oklahoma, the person. I'm just, like, I can't. Yeah. He can't be our cheap heat person.
Yeah. Oh, that's all he's here for,
that's
ever.
That's all he is, yeah.
Oklahoma's worried about the promo Mike Sanders has written for him. I'm going to get a lot of heat for this.
Oh, my God.
We got backup when, like, security everywhere, right? And Sanders promises. It's the thing about the verbal exchange here. Sanders goes, we do everything on a handshake, and Oklahoma makes a point to be like, and so do I.
We do everything on a handshake.
Oh, yeah,
we
you two are men of your word. I have no fucking doubt. Shut the fuck up.
What?
We then go to the Nitro opening pyro, and we get Tony Schiavone, Scott Hudson, and Mark Madden on commentary. They hype up Jeff Jarrett versus Conan and our main event for the world title for some reason, Scott Steiner versus Hugh G. Rection.
Woof.
I say for some reason, but last episode they were like, oh, the U.S. champion, that makes him like the number one contender, right?
I guess.
And I guess it does, because
yeah.
Here's the title shot.
But like, talk about a match with no heat. Like, who cares?
Oklahoma comes out to the ring and Mark Madden basically calls Jim Ross a miserable human being. I'm like,
oh, I missed that bit.
I mean, he's talking about Oklahoma, but clearly it's meant to be veiled. Or veiled is too strong. But
I missed all
like,
of that.
You guys have never even been in the same fucking company. Why do you hate Jim Ross that much?
Because Eric Bischoff is telling him to shit on Jim Ross.
It's unclear how around Bischoff is to
whoever the producer is.
Well, because he might be around because they're starting to do sales stuff. Maybe. But it's been so unclear. And Eric Bischoff does not help clear that up at any point.
No.
Who's actually in charge here?
No, this was his company from start to finish, obviously, if you read Controversy Creates Cash.
Oklahoma has a bowl with him and draws out heat to where commentary's like, dude, you gotta speed this up. Like
Scott Hudson was talking about what kind of bowl it was. I don't know why this came up, but the line that Scott Hudson said was, well, it can't be a salad bowl, not with that girth. What?
He's calling Oklahoma fat.
And I thought he was genuinely talking about the bowl, because it was a big bowl.
He's calling Oklahoma fat.
I genuinely thought he was talking about the bowl. It is a large, wide bowl.
But Tony Schiavone's like, we only have so much time for this segment. You have to keep going.
Yeah, he's like alluding to the format in front of him. Like, you must stop.
Apparently, University of Oklahoma is number one in college football.
And you say so.
And the character Oklahoma says, the bowl he has, the closest anyone in Nebraska will come to a bowl this season.
Ooh.
Sports.
Burn.
Leading into my hatred of the structure of college football. Even Tony Schiavone's like, yeah, that's not true. Because Nebraska did play in a bowl game. They won the Alamo Bowl. They won 66-17 over Northwestern, which is apparently a bowl record for the most amount of points in a bowl game.
So not only did they go to a bowl game, they did well in
a
bowl game.
There's 8,000 bowl games. There's just like more prestigious ones.
I feel like there's more bowl games in the year of our Lord 2025 than there were in 99 or 2000.
I don't know. Yeah, I hate the structure of college football, and I will never get past that, unfortunately.
Yeah, no. The culture of college football is actually fun. To me, it's very akin to like soccer culture or hockey culture. Like, it's a very passionate fan base.
Oklahoma has an announcement for Sid Vicious. If Sid steps out of line, he will be arrested. I'm like, oh, how vague to be able to do whatever you want and then have him get arrested.
Where's the line? What happened? Like, where is the line?
Holy shit, this goes on for fucking ever.
Yeah.
And eventually, Sid comes out in full light wash denim.
Very light, like almost whitewashed denim.
Oklahoma keeps calling for security, which doesn't come. Sid chokeslams him, and then Sanders comes out with cops, and Sid just gives up willingly, and Sid's brought out to a cop car and brought away.
Sid does, while this whole in-ring thing happens, before Sanders comes down, he does try to like hype up the crowd, like very much doing some like audience work.
He's good at that.
Yeah. But he's like, oh, did you guys like that? You want me to do another one? He signals for like another chokeslam, and that's when the cops come down.
Yeah.
And like he's working with the crowd.
But yeah, just the like the, well, you got me. I guess I fell into your trap, so now I give up. I'm like, come on, put up a little bit of a fight.
I guess he's a face, right?
Yeah, still.
Respecting authority.
Steve Austin didn't even fucking do that shit.
You can't compare the two right now.
I think I see Goldberg spear plenty of security.
You can't give me shit for not knowing heel and face and then give me more shit when I'm trying to make heel and face work. No.
We then get Scott Steiner arriving and he tells Mike Sanders that he wants Sid tonight. So Sanders like, well, that's a problem because Ric Flair just had Sid arrested. So Steiner's pissed and says that no one is safe.
Yes. And then he starts going on this whole rampage backstage where like the illusion throughout the whole episode is that he is like an uncaged animal. It's like you let a lion out from the zoo and it's just like, well, he's just going around eating people, basically. Hope you're hiding. Like,
which, admittedly, I like that a close-up shot of the tiger from like a month or two ago has now appeared in his Titantron.
Oh, yeah. It works.
We then get Pamela Paulshock with the Filthy Animals. Conan asks Billy what he thinks of the Harris boys. Emily, do you have a translation?
Chris boys, they have their... I don't do it as good.
Conan pitches a filthy animal street fight for Starrcade, and Pam starts setting up for her doing Kimmon's gimmick of the... And
we cut away.
We just cut away to a clip from Thunder of Tori Wilson dying.
They just cut away from Pamela Pumpkins. Meanwhile, so the whole time that they're doing that segment too, I want to pull back. Rey Mysterio, love him to pieces. He's being fucking creepy. He's like stroking her hair the whole time. Like, my top note is that, dude, stop touching her hair. It's so weird.
What happened recently in our lives that you remembered where you came up with the name Pamela Pumpkins?
Oh, because it's a character that I saw on TikTok. It's like, I'm Pamela Pumpkins, and it's like a Midwestern mom doing like a workout show on TikTok. And it's like got this whole song about, you know, working off, you know, pumpkin pie and turkey and yeah.
So we're gonna get sued for gimmick infringement.
I just found the video on TikTok.
But our next match, it's Chavo Guerrero Jr. versus Kiwi with Paisley.
I'm sorry, who?
Yes, he's back to being Chavo Guerrero Jr.
Chavo Guerrero?
Jr.
Can't believe he's having his big return.
Yeah, he has seemingly left the MIA. Kiwi and Paisley actually kiss beautiful people style, but Chavo attacks Kiwi and beats him down in the corner. Chavo keeps beating down Kiwi until a vest press. Chavo hits a short arm clothesline, then they go back to the corner. Kiwi hits a knee and then a drop kick and a half tilt-a-whirl slam.
Sorry, but I feel like at this point it is Angry Allen. It is no longer Kiwi. Because there is a point in the match where it does change over from Kiwi to Angry Allen. It's early on.
He's Kiwi.
If commentary is calling him Allen...
Chavo hits a float over DDT and then grabs a chair, but Paisley pulls out of the ring, the chair meaning to be like, yeah, he has a more ruthless side.
Yeah.
Chavo kicks out of a springboard sunset flip and then hits a drop kick and throws Kiwi to the floor. Chavo works Kiwi over on the floor for a second, and then Kiwi scoop tosses Chavo onto his face. Ow. Chavo vaults Kiwi into the corner, then hits a brain buster for the win, and we cut away like mid-hand raise.
Yeah, they're keeping the show moving tonight. I mean, it was nice to see Chavo be Chavo again.
Yeah, I think he varied his style and had enough of an attitude change where yeah, I'm like...
it was very much this is Chavo.
Yeah, the match was kind of nothing, but like the fact that he's in the middle of like kind of a heel turn, I'm like, no, he actually did some different stuff. And I'm like, good to him for actually like bothering to change his style the slight bit and actually put in some acting chops.
The match was fun enough. I'm not mad.
It was quick.
Yeah, it was quick. It was fun enough. The energy was there. I'm not mad at it.
Backstage, Mike Sanders and Ric Flair chat. Sanders says Steiner wants Sid brought back. Flair says he's going to get Sid back, but he's beefing up security.
Yeah, it seems like Ric Flair is kind of pissed that Mike Sanders took it into his own hands to send Sid to jail.
Yeah, well, he's also like, why did you tell Steiner I did it? You did it, motherfucker.
Yeah.
We then see Brian Clark on the phone, and he makes a deal with a mystery person. Adams wants to know who, and they don't say on camera. They
I'll just be honest, away. I'm still not totally sure what this call was. I know what match it results in. Still not totally sure what this call was.
Yeah, it might be a long build. I don't know.
Is it a worthwhile build?
Probably not.
No.
Mean Gene is then with the MIA. He asks about the title match, Tori Wilson, and Chavo. Rexion says that the Tori incident was an accident, like I was not trying to kill her. And Rexion mostly brushes past the Chavo thing, but does manage to put over that, like, hey, this title match is, like, a big deal for me. Because, I mean, it would be. You are wrestling for the world title.
Yeah,
so.
It should be. But he's Hugh Morris here.
He's not, though. I forget what Gene calls him.
The names really do start to flux out of the MIA style in this episode. And it's hard to tell, like, when it actually happens.
But during the main event, his nameplate says General Rexion.
But commentary is calling him Morris.
They're calling him Rexion to the main event. But
the main event?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Other people call him Hugh Morris throughout this. We then get Lance Storm and Team Canada coming out of the ring for a hardcore title match. Storm has a mic and wants to be serious for a minute.
Commentary calls him on this. Like, oh, I bet he wants to be serious.
Yeah, he has a style. Storm says tonight primetime will win the hardcore title. And then does actually call back to the, if he wins it, we're going to go back to the Saskatchewan Hardcore International title, or whatever it was.
Saskatchewan Hardcore International title, yeah.
Yeah, in my brain, the H wasn't hardcore, but I guess it probably is.
Yeah, the shit title.
As a reminder, they wanted to call that the Stu Hart International title.
It's a little less cumbersome than Saskatchewan Hardcore, but you know.
Storm wants the weapons removed from ringside and calls for the anthem. The cat then interrupts with Miss Jones as Storm...
Why the fuck is the cat here?
Yeah, Storm joins commentary, so these two also join commentary.
So it's a, what, five-man bench? Six? So,
Tony Schiavone's like, I don't think we have enough headsets.
No. Which pisses off the cat, because he's like, no, give me yours.
Yeah, the cat grabs a mic, says he's not here to fight, he's here to watch this match, and Mark Madden gives him his headset. But our actual match here is Elix Skipper versus Crowbar with Daphne for the hardcore title.
Daphne and Crowbar!
Crowbar immediately throws some weapons in the ring. Skipper dropkicks Crowbar to the floor, then throws him back in. They trade shots with a car grill until Skipper hits a leg drop. Duggan hits Crowbar with a 2x4, and Major Guns hits a slap, so Daphne takes her down. She whiffs this pretty good.
Something makes a slapping noise. I'm not totally sure what he hit or she hit that make that noise, but it was not her hand on his face.
Mark Madden then insults the cat, so they start to fight. So Storm then stops that fight, and Jim Duggan accidentally hits Storm with his 2x4. The cat then takes out Duggan, and he and Jones leave. Daphne has been distracting the ref for some reason here, and Crowbar hits a Falcon Arrow on the car grill for the win. I did not understand why there had to be interference in a hardcore match, why this needed to involve the cat and Lance Storm.
It didn't.
And I'm like...
This match could have very easily been my best bit. Elix Skipper versus Crowbar. They put so much extra bullshit in it.
They didn't do anything either.
We don't know that because they didn't show us the ring. They were so focused on what was going on commentary or ringside. Like, they did not focus on what was actually happening in the ring. It could have been a lot going on. It could have been a great match. We'll never know.
Yeah, this was just mostly disappointing. I'm like, oh.
Yes, it was disappointing. Yeah, as soon as all the ringside shit started going down, like... My note is, don't ruin the match. It's not about you. But it is, because it's the cat, and everything is about the cat.
Speaking of somebody everything's all about, we got a paid Jimmy Hart announcement.
Why the fuck are we still doing this?
He's still fucking trying to fight radio DJs.
And he's, like, calling some out by name, too. Like, hey, I'm saying your name. Please respond. Like, babe, no one's texting you back.
I showed you my megaphone. Please respond. Yeah, he just, like, names people, and it's like, they've signed up. You could be next.
No, they haven't, though. You're just naming DJs.
It's like making music. If I just change some of the letters and sign them up, then they have to.
Oh, my God.
We then get David Flair backstage with Stacy, and for some reason, he waited 5 days to be like, why are you back? He didn't ask that in between Thunder and now.
No. Couldn't have any kind of conversations backstage. No, like, what?
Or, you know, outside working thing. She, well, I guess she's not pregnant with this child, but...
I mean, I guess, like, yeah, they're not... They don't have to be, like, on full speaking terms.
Yeah, but he's like, why are you back? She's like, I'm worried about you. Just don't ask who the father is. I'll tell you eventually.
Yeah, I think that was Stacy's way of being like, I don't want to fucking do this angle anymore, but I want to be on TV, so just don't ask me this shit. Let's just pretend like I miss you and we're having a relationship, whatever.
Ric Flair then comes in and warns the two about Scott Steiner, and he's like, I'm going to have security, like, help you guys leave and get somewhere safe. Which I'm like, yeah, fair.
Yeah.
That's it for them. Reno is then with Marie. She wants her family back.
See, this is the juxtaposition of the Stacy and David segment to Reno and Marie. I'm like, so it's couple to couple, right? If they had stayed on the Stacy and David stuff, I think, like, I was more interested and invested in that storyline. Like, that kind of stuff, like, is interesting to me. Reno and Marie, I don't give a fuck. And it took me until, like, almost the end of the segment for me to be like, oh, right, siblings. It's embarrassingly too long.
Speaking of embarrassingly too long, Lex Luger comes out to the ring with Goldberg's book and a microphone.
Oh, my God. Maybe this is my worst bit. Jesus Christ.
Crowd immediately chants for Goldberg. Luger says that Goldberg only has 13 days left in WCW unless he wins 150 matches between now and then, which...
Fuck me. I don't think that's possible.
Well, based on 98 numbers, that might be, but... Yeah. Or 98 inflated numbers, maybe. It definitely doesn't help that WCW's not doing house shows anymore.
Right. You can't even lie.
But then Luger says Goldberg isn't here yet, and he wants to highlight someone who made Goldberg who he is, and calls for Sarge to stand up and take a bow, who's in the front row of the crowd.
So Sarge was like the lead trainer in the power plant.
Yes, I think the power plant is still going at this point. So actually, it is. So he is still in charge there.
Yeah, so he is in charge of all the new talent. So we were watching an old video.
No, it's new. It's OSW.
Oh, was that new?
Yeah, that was.
Oh, I thought you just found that on YouTube. No,
yeah, OSW did a review of a BBC documentary about WCW hosted by Louis Theroux?
I think it's Theroux, but...
I feel like I've heard it in the accent as Theroux, but... Yeah, and Sarge is prominent in that of keeping kayfabe like a fucking carny and turning bright pink on a moment's notice.
I think it's cool. It was a really fun documentary to watch, especially like it was very much like a time capsule too, yeah, of like what was going on in this era. So it was weird. It was weird timing. So like we learned a lot about Sarge, saw a lot of Sarge, and then watched this episode. And we're like, oh.
Yeah. Also, guy. On the same day, I learned about Hardbody Harrison and his crimes and then saw Hardbody Harrison. Anyway, yeah. So Sarge is here in the front row for some reason.
Yeah. So was Lex Luger thanking Sarge or was he trying to like make a fool out of Sarge?
This whole promo is meant to be sarcastic, but Lex Luger can't act well enough to do it. We've heard of this before. Lex Luger cannot do sarcasm in a promo.
No. And like Sarge wasn't helping because everything that Lex was trying to make like pointed, he was like, you know what? Yeah, that is true about me. Yeah, you're right. Like, yeah, I do work hard. What?
Yeah, so Luger reads from Goldberg's book about Sarge, and I don't know what this was. Maybe they like, just like taped the excerpts to one page. I swear, he does not flip pages in between sections.
It might have been that. They might have like written it on one piece of paper so he doesn't have to flip.
But he's just reading. This goes on for so long. Luger then once again sarcastically calls for a round of applause for Sarge. And then goes to leave, and the music hits, but he's like, you know what, actually, one more thing. He insults Sarge in the power plant, and he's like, oh yeah, I bet Goldberg's been giving you a bunch of his millions of dollars, so you're probably living great. Ooh. Like, yeah.
It feels like you just kind of forgot about that one point.
Yeah, and like, and that's the big got-em here, is that Goldberg did not give large amounts of his pay to Sarge.
Why is that a got-em?
I don't know, what? Man. This was just awkwardly done.
This like, is bad.
Would you believe it? Lex Luger. Not great for giving context in a promo.
Good lord.
Oh, and Goldberg is here now. Which like just makes him look like a dick.
Yeah, it's like you would think he'd come out and like defend Sarge's honor or something.
He didn't see any of it because he just got here. I'm like, stop showing up late, asshole.
We'll never fix that. No. That's happening like current day. Like they're showing like the talent rolling up to the show as it's starting. Like you're late.
We then see Norman Smiley just chatting backstage with the Nitro Girl. He's apparently facing Goldberg tonight. Except he's not, because Scott Steiner comes in and just attacks him for no reason.
I took this as Scott Steiner stealing Norman's spot. I took this as Scott wants a match with Goldberg, so he's going to take out the opponent of Goldberg and be like, no, actually me.
There's a way they could do that. I think this was just meant to be more, I'm fucking up Ric Flair's plans.
Okay. It was sad, though, because I loved Norman. I wanted to see Norman, but alas...
We then get Pamela Paulshock asking the franchise about the Tori Wilson incident, and Shane Douglas keeps referring to his opponent as Hugh Morris, and says he's going to make Hugh suffer for hurting Tori, and then Pamela also closes out by saying Hugh Morris.
So are we just, we're done with Rection, we're done with, we're...
we've gone soft.
Fuck you.
No, he is back to Rection earlier, so the blue chew kicked in.
Fuck you.
Hugh, I just wrote Hugh next. I'm like, it's safe. Hugh and AWOL talk as Lash LaRue and Chavo talk in the background. And Hugh Morris, Hugh G. Rection, whatever, is calling him Lash during this segment.
Yeah, so. They're just straight up going Lash LaRue. So, like, the names are gone. The fact that you called the wall AWOL, is that still his name?
I think so, but Lash is ignoring Hugh. Dissension.
Dissension.
Smellness. Ric Flair warns Arn and Finlay about Scott Steiner because they both work at Gorilla now. Like, okay, Finlay's here.
Yeah. And like the vibe around Ric Flair going around backstage is very much like there's a killer on the loose. You better keep safe. Like, find some place to hide. Hold your loved ones close. Like, it's like Scott Steiner is going on a killing spree. He's not killed a man.
And then Arn Anderson's counting his loved ones and he's like, 1, 2, 3. Huh. How about that?
This is an audio podcast.
Let's go to our next match. It's for the tag team titles, which one of these groups recently came up because we realized 3 Count has never won the tag team titles, but they can here on they paper won't. Against Kevin Nash and DDP.
Spoiler, they don't.
It doesn't help that as 3 Count's coming out for this title match, commentary is like, hey, they're in a three-team ladder match at Starrcade for a Cruiserweight title shot, which doesn't fucking make any sense.
That does not make sense, but also, if they won the title match here, why would they be in the three-count match later?
Yeah, I mean, that would be a good tag team title match, but...
Yeah, but it's not that.
Helms then grabs a mic and puts over the pay-per-view match, and then they're interrupted by the tag champs. Match starts, Nash immediately pokes fun at the height difference and beats down Moore in the corner.
And like, what time frame do you think we're in the show?
Probably about halfway.
Okay, so Raw just started. There's a guy in the audience that's going to tell us that Raw just started. Because it was like the 45-minute point in our file. At that point, I swear this guy was looking at his watch. He puts the sign up that says Raw just started. And he doesn't keep it up for very long. So I think he timed it out to be like, the minute Raw starts, put it up. And then when it's 8:01, put it down. Like, what a man.
Really shows he's happy to be there.
I mean, doing the Lord's work.
Mark Madden calls himself the heel announcer.
Like, we are just not even pretending anymore. Like, we weren't pretending for a while, but, like, we're calling out the format. We're saying heel and face. Like, we're not even pretending.
The format's fine because there are scheduled matches. So it's like, hey, here's, like, we gave time to this person to do an interview.
I guess.
Like, yeah, but... there's a difference between format and the script.
Yeah.
And technically, they don't say it, so this is fine, but the insiders egg on a We Want Hall chant.
Yeah, and it's loud.
Nash hits a big BO, which results in Moore almost landing on his neck. It's like, oh, God. DDP and Helms come in as we cut to Mike Sanders backstage saying, I'm going to set it off.
The fuck does that mean?
He's going to set it off, Emily.
What does that mean? What are you setting off?
Emily, he's going to set it off.
Pyro?
He's going to set it off.
What else do you set off?
Three Guns still basically get no offense until Moore breaks up a pin after a flapjack.
A flapjack.
Okay. Three Count hit a double suplex and we get a DDP chant, which I think I just noted because I'm like, oh my God, they chanted for somebody in this show. That's rare. True.
They're actually paying attention, kind of.
DDP has to crawl to tag in Nash and he cleans house and big boots both men, then hits Snake Eyes. Wants a jackknife, does the whole cigarette taunt thing first, gets him out, it's the powerbomb, DDP hits a super diamond cutter, Nash stacks the two men to thoroughly bury Three Count and win the match.
Jesus.
Like, holy shit, guys, we get it, they're not on your level.
Good lord.
The Natural Born Thrillers immediately come out, and Sanders draws out his promo, and then calls Ric Flair out to the stage. They have to pass the microphone back and forth, because they didn't bother to grab two.
Oh, yeah, and talk about going off the script. Like, that's just so awkward. Like, let me say my line, now let you say your line. Like, painful.
So Sanders throws through a clip from Mayhem, and the clip is meant to be Kevin Nash pinned the wrong guy.
Yes.
However,
the way we get about this is so cumbersome.
We see Kevin Nash tag in.
Yes.
And we see that clip, and then we cut to a different clip of Palumbo or Stasiak tagging in, and... DDP's in the ring, so I'm like, okay, that doesn't seem to be from that same thing, so I think this is just made up, but Ric Flair doesn't give a shit enough to look into this at all.
You're a great wrestler. I'm retired. I'm retired? More like, I am lit-tired.
So Sanders says that Nash pinned the illegal man, and so Ric Flair's like, alright, you gotta give up the title belts, but I'll make it up to you. So Nash and DDP drop the titles in the center of the ring to lure Sanders in. And Ric Flair books the perfect event versus the insiders at Starrcade. There's no sweetener. There's like nothing like no. I'll make it up to you. It's like you just get a
you
match.
Just gave me a match.
That
a
Mike Sanders match. Probably would have booked anyway.
Right.
So, great.
There's no handicap. There's no, actually, it's no DQ. There's no, like, nothing.
Yeah, or steel cage. Keep the other thrillers out. No. DDP and Nash eventually kick the titles to the apron and Sanders grabs them. And DDP grabs a mic and says at Starrcade, the Thrillers are SOL, which means that they're going to feel the bang.
The bang!
I mean, credit to DDP for, I don't know if it was meant to be part of the segment, but he actually gave a little life to the end of the segment. It was just like, I grab the titles and we awkwardly end this segment. So
it's just like, everyone is phoning it in. And we've been saying this for weeks now, and it's just like, I can't find a world where, like, you in 2000... are a wrestling fan, and your buddy comes into the room and is like, ooh, what are you watching? And you're like, oh, you should watch with me. This is great. There's no world where that happens.
Yeah, and it doesn't help that you've lost the majority of your main event stars. So even like, you're like, oh, I'm like tuning in. Oh, I remember this guy, or this guy's a big deal.
No, it's like, there's none of that.
But But this match just served to bury a team that, like, you're kind of trying to build up in the three count. And the post-match was just bullshit and a shortcut to create stakes for Starrcade, because it seemed like, oh, they got their moment at Mayhem. What if we had even a bigger moment somehow at Starrcade? Because that tended to be the culmination of everything.
Right. But also just, like, fuck three count. Doesn't matter for them. Are they trying to build them? Because it feels like they're constantly trying to bury them.
I mean, I don't know. They're featuring them, I think is maybe featuring, a better word.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's puzzling there. And even more puzzling is our next segment in just logistics alone.
Yes.
Mike.
What the fuck?
Mike Awesome is walking backstage. We see him for 2 seconds before he walks directly next to an ambulance. So Bam Bam Bigelow has been hiding inside the ambulance and slams the door open to hit Mike Awesome, and this, like, knocks him out.
So think about the logistics of this.
Yes.
So are there windows on the back of an ambulance?
Yes. However, Bam Bam hid in the back of an ambulance in the off chance that Mike Awesome happened to walk within the door's distance of the ambulance.
That's
the part, parking lot somewhere in the arena.
Because, like, you can kind of fathom, like, okay, this is the path between X and Y, so he has to cross this path.
Yeah, or but if he you needs to go in to, there, like, for some reason.
Yeah, but you have to be so sure of how this man is going to walk to be in a car to hit him with the door.
Like, you need to have Crowbar get stretchered out, and then he emerges.
Yeah.
Bam Bam is like, I'll see you at Starrcade, so that's eventually going to get paid off, because we were supposed to have that match at Mayhem, and then it got changed to Bam Bam and AWOL.
Oh.
Because we found Mike Awesome through a table, devastated.
Right, I forgot about that. I feel like this is going to be a better match than that, though.
Yeah, we'll see.
Mike Awesome, Bam Bam, it could be good. You might like it.
We then get Reno versus Chronic. And commentary's like, all right, well, who paid Chronic? Are we ever going to find out? Chronic beat down Reno, hit a full Nelson slam. The ref immediately throws this match out as Chronic were both in the ring and hit a high times.
Yeah.
Marie is then seen backstage and goes somewhere as Chronic hits another high times. And Vito comes down to save Reno.
Bear in mind, the match got DQ'd about 10 seconds into the match.
Yes. Marie comes down to look after Reno and Vito leaves. This was a collective 90 seconds, maybe?
Useless 90 seconds.
Yeah.
Fucking useless, chaotic, stupid, and bad.
They are simultaneously trying to have Vito and Reno feud while also trying to have them pair back up.
But we also, this is the payoff to a segment earlier where Chronic got paid to do this match. This wasn't a match.
By someone. I mean, I think it was just to beat down Reno.
But, like, they could have done that backstage.
I don't know, brother.
This doesn't make any sense.
Blood runs cold again.
Ice, baby.
Yeah, Glacier's still coming eventually. Backstage, Daphne and Crowbar chat. Daphne offers Crowbar a ride to, I guess, the hotel or wherever, but he says he has that covered and leaves with two of the Nitro girls.
Ooh.
The Nitro girls really just exist now to sleep with people, it seems like, in story.
Yeah. But hey, Crowbar's got game.
And then Daphne hisses at a stagehand who needs to get into the case she's sitting on.
And you're like, that was so you-coded.
Yeah, I'm just like,
I'm thrilled to see Daphne and Crowbar again. Like, yeah. I'm not upset about them being here. And they do make me happy when I see them. And I love that Crowbar's got game. He's getting the ladies.
Ric Flair chats with security and says they won't get Sid out tonight. So don't expect Sid.
Cool.
We then get M.I. Smooth. Listen to that pin drop. Versus Goldberg.
Genuinely pin drop. Like, M.I. Smooth got nothing. I feel like the crowd was collectively confused as to why he was coming out.
And he milks his entrance so long. He's still, like, on the ramp when they're like, nope, Goldberg, just play his music.
Like, dude, figure it out. Nobody wants to see you.
They face off, trade big strikes. Smooth runs into a big boot in the corner. Then Goldberg gets a spear and a jackhammer and wins. Goldberg hugs Sarge post-match.
Yay.
Cool. It's sad when, like, these aren't even fun anymore.
It's not fun. Used to be fun, faffy, bad, and stupid.
Well, it was also smaller guys who would actually, like, bump around and be fun. Like, can he get the big man up? I'm like, he's done it to the giant. Yes, he can. I know he can.
Why the fuck is M.I. Smooth have a match against Goldberg? And why was Goldberg so wet?
Honestly, you questioning, can he get the big man up, is you going, is Goldberg in worse shape than he used to be?
Right.
Scott Steiner and Medeja are backstage.
Oh, good. That'll help.
Steiner says he's going to hurt somebody.
Cool. Thanks. Thanks for being here.
Then we get Jeff Jarrett versus Conan. Jeff Jarrett cuts a promo. He has the stroke. Yada, what? Yada, yada.
Since when has Jeff Jarrett had stroke? That's crazy.
Jeff Jarrett accepts the match that already got advertised, which is the Filthy Animals street fight for Starrcade. And Jared says he has guitars for all the Filthy Animals and choke on that.
You get a guitar. You get a guitar. Everybody gets a guitar. Check under your seats. There's guitars for everybody.
Conan comes out in some cool new sunglasses.
Sure. They look like bug sunglasses.
A little bit.
So it's like go over the front of your head. They look terrible.
Jeff Jarrett tells the ref to send the jacked up termites and the skank to the back.
So maybe they agree that it looks like a bug because he called him a termite.
No.
Glasses make him look like a bug.
Conan's the only one who's staying, Emily. So you're talking about Ray and Kidman.
They don't look like bugs, though.
They're small. I don't know. So they have to go to the back, but Jarrett attacks Conan from behind as they're leaving, and Ray trips Jarrett before they actually fully leave. Conan hits his back kick and his face buster. Jarrett pulls Conan to the floor and lightly throws him around ringside. Jeff Jarrett hits a chair shot on the outside and then brings Conan back in and taunts the crowd. Conan hits a vault over in the corner and then hits a DDT and a dropkick. Jarrett dodges a rolling clothesline and both men go down on a double clothesline. Jarrett then feigns a knee injury on the clothesline, which is quite a choice.
Yeah.
The Harris boys come down, H-bomb Conan. Jarrett hits a stroke on Conan. As Filthy Animals come back out, him and the Harris boys brawl, but the stroke was enough for Jarrett to get the win.
Woo.
Yeah. Admittedly, when I was watching this, the show was not killing me, but running it back through, I'm like,
it's
God,
just we've
there's
seen
nothing.
All of this before. Like, this is a filler episode where it's just like,
It's a filler episode on a 3-week pay-per-view build. You can't
I know,
have a filler
we can't
episode.
Be doing filler episodes. But it hit me when you were doing the Thunder run through. They have no ideas for new and different matches and content. They're just recycling, hoping that viewers aren't watching both shows. We've seen all this shit already.
It's like, yeah, just put the Harris boys with Jarrett. They've teamed before. It's fine.
Yeah.
And somehow, that brings us all the way to our main event.
How? How the fuck are we at our main event already?
Yeah, like nothing happened.
Nothing has happened! I recognize that as we're getting to the end of this podcast, like Nick said, we only have 15 Nitros left. We're gonna get more and more cynical. That is kind of the point of this show. When we watch the final Nitro, it should be a mix of thank fucking God it's over and aw, what a fun little trip we had. And then you listen to the beginning. Like, you need to watch like our descent into madness and like, it's happening. I feel it every single time we sit down to record. I'm like, why the fuck are we doing this?
Yeah, I've said this before, but I always hear like, oh no, like Nitro like gets better towards the end. I'm like,
Brother, I'm at the end.
Is the better in the room with us?
I don't think that you know when the end is. Wikipedia doesn't.
Yeah.
Nobody does. Fucking ChatGPT doesn't.
But our main event match, it is Scott Steiner versus Hugh G. Rection for the WWE title.
Hugh G. Morris.
And Jesus, Scott Steiner is looking vascular in this show.
Vascular. That's a really good word. For veiny. Yeah.
Steiner has a mic and says he took out Booker and Sting, and then says since Rick brought Sid in for Starrcade, he has until the end of the match to bring Sid back or he's going to go after Rick. We then, for like a second, see Rick is watching and then leaves to go somewhere before Rection comes out. Scott attacks Rection getting in the ring and works him over in the corner. Rection hits shoulder blocks and clotheslines and then a diving clothesline, which has Steiner bailing to the floor. He then tries to scoop slam back in the ring, but Rection slips out and hits a lazy side slam where he picks him up for it and then just drops him.
Emphasis on the lazy.
I'm like, dude, come, go down to the mat with him.
Phone it in, man.
Medeja jumps on Rection's back in a callback to the Tori spot. I was like, okay, well, yeah. That's clever. Rection does not charge back into the corner because he doesn't want to kill another woman.
Fair.
So Steiner regains control. Steiner hits an elbow, then does some push-ups. Steiner brings Rection back to the corner, hits strikes before spinning belly to belly. Scott hits a backbreaker, then poses for the crowd and ties up Rection in the corner, which I don't know whether it was functional or just like meant to be for show, but Rection is upside down in a tree of woe and Medeja is holding his leg. And I don't know whether that's meant to be like for support actually, or just like, oh yeah, they're cheating because he does not look tight in there.
He doesn't. I think it was supposed to be for cheating.
But I'm saying it might have been both.
Maybe, yeah.
Steiner keeps beating down Rection and we go back to the corner. Scott wants a tiger bomb, but Rekshin counters out, starts to come back. Rekshin vaults to the floor onto Steiner, but then is distracted by Medasia. Rekshin hits a power slam and then a German suplex, and he goes up top for the raging climax and hits it, but only gets a two. Crowd did not bite on the near fall.
No, they really didn't. They don't care.
Rekshin tries a Vader bomb, but Steiner gets his knees up, and then it's a T-bone suplex and pulls Rekshin in position to lock into Steiner recliner on the hard cam, and he gets the win.
Woo!
Let's chat about the match before the post-match.
Oh my god. What match?
I didn't think this was bad. It was
no, it was boring.
Yeah, it was a little long considering, like, you knew Rekshin wasn't winning. Like, you're building up this whole thing with Sid and Steiner, and you're like, oh, let's have a title match. I'm like, he's not going to fucking win.
God, no. And, like, I'm still unclear as to why they seem to really want to be pushing Hugh Morris. Like, remember that weird, like, we love you Hugh Morris thing that happened a couple weeks ago? Why are we doing this? And every time every time we get a backstage thing with him, it is so white meat baby face of, like, I love America. Like, what? Why are we doing this with him of all people?
I don't know.
And he's getting this, like, baby face push that I don't know why we've chosen that this is justified. Like, I don't hate Hugh Morris. It just feels really out of place.
I mean, he is a shoot piece of shit. You can't hate him.
I'm not looking into that. I'm living in the year 2000. I don't have internet access in the year 2000. I'm sorry.
You are six.
I'm 6 years old. I don't know what the internet is. All I want to do is play The Sims.
Let's get into our post-match angle, because Scott Steiner then grabs a mic and is like, all right, Ric Flair, your time is up. And he goes to get Rick. We then see Shane Douglas is now attacking Huge Erection at ringside.
Where did he come from?
I don't know.
Was he hiding under the ring a la, like, Hornswoggle?
In gorilla position, Scott Steiner attacks Arn Anderson. It's like, you're Flair's friend, right?
Yeah. You'll lure him out, I guess.
He brings him to the stage, clubs the back, and Arn takes the most exaggerated bump and rolls down the entire ramp.
He's
spring-loaded. He gets clubbed on the back and then, like, boing.
And, like, every tumble down the ramp, he is, like, jolting himself to continue the tumble. The man's got a future in gymnastics.
In the ring, Steiner hits Arn with the lead pipe, then locks in a Steiner recliner. For some reason, Finley in Gorilla is holding Ric Flair back of, like, you're the CEO, but he's a great wrestler. You can't go out there.
You're a great wrestler. I'm retired.
Yeah, you think that you can't go out there. So Goldberg runs past them down to the ring, and as Goldberg, like, gets right to ringside, Lex Luger comes in from fucking nowhere.
Again, hiding?
And blasts him with the loaded forearm.
What the fuck?
He's then working over Goldberg with a chair. Lex also hits Sarge with a chair, who has seemingly hopped the barricade.
Why is Sarge here?
Security then comes out and tries to break everything up. We hear Scott Hudson say, Sid! And cut to Sid in the ring.
He's, like, on ringside, like, being held down by security. We don't see him run in. We don't see where he came from. We don't see, like, any of his, you know, animated facial expressions. He's just there.
Steiner goes to the floor. Security stops holding him. So they go to keep trying holding Sid, who goes to get out of the ring, and they, like, tie him up in the ropes. So Steiner starts punching Sid. Security doesn't try to stop him.
No.
And we're out of time.
This was such shades of early Nitro for us. We're like, chaos. The whole locker comes out and just, we got to go by.
And maybe it's because of that. I'm like, you know what? This achieved the manic energy they were going for.
I don't know that this was manic. This just felt... There's a difference between manic energy and unplanned energy. Or poorly planned energy, I guess.
I disagree. I think this went exactly to their plan.
And I think their plan was poorly planned.
Okay.
I think it's both.
I actually liked this as a jolt of energy in this show.
I thought it was just chaos.
As a show that dragged. Really this did. Was just like, oh shit, things are happening.
Yeah, I guess that's fair. Send the crowd home a little adrenaline.
And the good timing of Lex hitting Goldberg reminded me of, in the year 2025, Charles Robinson getting obliterated by John Cena. Just that, like, oh God, where did he come from?
Oh my God. I was thinking about the time we met him recently.
Yeah, where he said, I'm going to ref till I die. And I'm like, please don't.
Please don't do that. Like, Nick genuinely said that to him. Like, please don't do that. Nicest guy, though.
Yeah, I thought this was... Yeah, listen, a bit of lively energy to leave the show on, where it's like, hey, you know, the illusion of things are happening.
That's it. The illusion. I don't care for illusions.
Yeah.
Unless it's magic, and I like magical illusions.
Illusions, Michael. A trick is something a whore does for money. Or candy.
I get that now.
Now, Emily, there is something very important that has not been mentioned throughout this entire Nitro.
Oh, God.
And it's not something you would have known.
Okay.
Because it's not something they knew.
Okay.
Next week's Nitro is on Tuesday. They didn't advertise that once.
No, why is it on Tuesday?
They get bumped for some other programming. No, they don't find out till Thursday after Thunder's aired on Wednesday.
Oh, so they have no time to market this.
We'll get into it a little bit next time, but apparently Terry Taylor got told a month ago and forgot to relay it to anybody. So,
oh my God.
Next week's rating is not great.
Yeah, because no one knew we were on. Oh, no.
Yeah, so they got with the whole show and didn't know to advertise. Hey, just so you know.
Jesus. Yikes, that's not good at all.
No.
You knew a month ago? Come on, man.
Thoughts on this show as a whole?
I'm bored.
Yeah, you know, I don't think it was a terrible watch in the moment, but once you put any thought in, it's
exactly.
Like...
It benefits from the lack of logic. If you don't do what we're doing and sit down and really think through what's happening, you just sit and enjoy it. This happened with the ECW show we just watched, where like
different
you had
way.
To watch it in a different way, but you were just watching it and enjoying it in the moment. And in the review, you were like, "I'm cooling on it." In the moment, it's enjoyable. ECW is way more enjoyable than this, but
it doesn't help that we're in the build to their quote unquote biggest show of the year.
Yeah.
And
can you imagine pulling this 3 weeks from WrestleMania?
I mean, some years, yeah.
But they will make it known that we are 3 weeks out from WrestleMania.
I was thinking about this recently that I'm like, man, a lot of the Starrcade main events have some sort of bullshit going on with them.
Oh.
And I'm like, oh, fuck, I don't know if there's one for this one. And it makes me scared. And I'm also like now prepped for it because I'm like, the two we've done had the Goldberg streak ending via cattle prod and...
Oh, God.
And the Roddy Piper rehashing the Montreal Screwjob with Brett winning this time.
Jesus Christ.
So our Starrcade record is not great.
No, I forgot that those were... I forgot that happened at Starrcade.
And mild spoilers, Starrcade 96 is going to have a weird ending too. So.
Great!
As is Starrcade 97.
Cool.
Yeah, I did a write-up of Starrcade 94. I think the weird ending for that is just a terrible main event of Hulk Hogan versus Ed Leslie.
Oh, God, yeah.
That's the one where we started watching and I went, this just isn't going to make a good review. This is just boring.
No.
So hopefully Starrcade 2000 is not that boring.
I mean, even if it is, we'll sit here and commiserate on mics.
We got a six-person ladder match. I'm hoping...
That's true.
That's like one thing I'm like... Please be good.
Just got to give us something. Dude, I don't have a best bit. I don't know what I'm going to do for this ending segment here. I am struggling.
Okay, well, we're going to listen to Emily struggle because it is now time for best bit, worst bit, and MVP. Emily, I'll give you my three and then you can
do
yours. Okay,
because I have two penciled in. I'm not happy with any of them. Don't have an MVP. Actually, don't have a best bit. Ah, fuck, I don't know. I'm waffling.
My best bit is the post-main event chaos. Everyone comes out, like, high energy. Like, I think I had to kind of talk myself into that because there's not really a match worth it. Bit of life at the end of the show. I was watching it going, oh, fuck, what's going to happen next? Which is what they want, so.
I guess.
My worst bit is the Oklahoma return and segment with Sid because...
Yeah. See, we were flush for options with worst bit. I have a worst bit.
And then my MVP is Chavo for what I mentioned earlier of like changing
MVP.
His style, doing a good job in his match, doing some character work. I'm like, yeah, I like what Chavo's doing. I like the effort he's putting in.
That's a good MVP. I agree with your worst bit. I agree with your MVP. I don't agree with your best bit. So what I have so far for my best bit is Daphne and Crowbar reuniting and being on screen again together.
Even though he's actively friend-zoning her.
I don't care. I love Crowbar and I love Daphne. I love her crazy antics and I love him, you know, embracing what's going on. Like, he really has taken the Mike Awesome, whatever you're going to call that, like, that 70s guy gimmick and, like, run with it. So I'm just happy to see them together. That's my best bit.
Daphne is going to get 60s attire on Thunder.
I'll take that. I'll take that.
Which makes no fucking sense.
It sure doesn't, but I'll take it. My worst bit is that Lex Luger book segment. That was so fucking bad. Where he's just reading from Goldberg's book and antagonizing Sarge for no fucking reason. The worst. MVP, I have no idea. I think I want to give it to Daphne. Just for her character work and her consistency. Because she's the only thing that made me happy in this episode. Chavo was a really good one. Like, I do agree with you with that. I think I'm giving it to Daphne. I'm sorry.
You don't want to give it to Jimmy Hart? He's fighting radio DJs.
Nope, really don't.
Oh, God.
God, that was a rough best worst MVP.
Yeah. Yeah. Ugh. Well, we have one more Nitro. It's a Tuesday Nitro and then Starrcade.
Woohoo! Oh, my God. This Tuesday Nitro is the go-home for Starrcade?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, I'm sure that won't affect the buy rate at all.
No, I'm sure it's going to be the best buy rate they've ever had. Yikes.
Well, I've been listening to the before and after of our decline of energy and life, as Emily mentioned. You can do so on our back catalog, pretty much everywhere podcasts are found. Go to follow us on social media, at Butts in the Pod. We're mostly posting when episodes are live.
Yeah.
And then we mentioned earlier, patreon.com/buttsintheseats. $5 a month gets you our new Rise of the NWO arc, plus a bunch of other episodes, including New Monday Night Wars, Eric Bischoff and Vince Russo book reports.
Yes.
All aboard the Lex Express.
Oh my God.
Remember when we did that?
Legends House, The Marine.
we bury that one.
We forgot that we watched The Marine. We've done so much random shit over there. We didn't even talk about the Christmas movie we watched recently.
Oh, you know what? Our next episode's coming out on Christmas. We'll have to do that.
We'll talk about it then.
We watched Santa's Sleigh. We meant to bring that up next time we saw Goldberg, but would you believe it? We forgot about that movie.
It was not good. Oh my God. What a time. What a time to be alive. Go over on the Patreon. We're having way more fun and we're a lot more excited about being alive over there.
Not on World War III, we're not.
Most of the time.
Emily, any closing thoughts before we keep chugging towards Starrcade 2000, the last real one ever?
Oh, no. I'm excited to put this behind us.
Yeah, because WWE did some live shows and called them Starrcade. Woof. It's like, guys, come on.
That's
like
offensive.
2016.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, they just had the name. And what's one more fuck you to WCW?
Well, I'm sure we'll have plenty next time. But until then, I'm Nick.
I'm Emily.
And thanks for listening to the Butts in the Seats podcast.
Bye!